This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings alongside three-time Super Bowl winning executive Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We got lots of college hoops and NFL talk upon us as the opening weekend of the NCAA tournament is officially in the books. And we've got the owners meetings going on in Orlando. But Michael, March Madness has been March sadness for a lot of people, including myself. My bracket is donezo, my friend. How are you?
Look, when the 1 and 2 seeds, when it goes off on script, I mean, everybody's can't be perfect, right? Whoever goes into this thing thinking that there's not going to be some kind of upset. So I think I have three teams left. Of course, I was the idiot that took Kentucky. You only took Kentucky for all the wrong reasons. You were right about Kentucky, and then you got scared and put them in your list. But you were right. You should have stuck with your instincts on that one. But, you know, to me, yesterday wasn't. I thought, obviously, the Houston-Texas A&M game was a great game. But there wasn't those compelling games that you thought. It kind of went off. It went on script.
Yeah. And I also think, Michael, I don't know if you agree with this or not, but the second round scheduling, this the way that the games were staggered, I know that they've done it for a number of years this way where you've got kind of those standalones in the morning. But like, I want game after game after game after game. Like, I don't want to have to sit there, and no offense to a producer, Elliot, who I know is savoring every moment of that Purdue Utah State game. But like, let's get something competitive on the screen. Let's watch something else. I don't want to be stuck watching this.
Yeah, and then didn't the Utah State coach leave immediately for the University of Washington? I wish we would have known that on Sunday, right? You know, because his team didn't play as well as you would have hoped, but Purdue was very good. But to me, this is about, you know, Sunday, the tip-off on the San Diego-Yale game, San Diego State, your alma mater, it's 9:40 our time here. That's okay on a Saturday night, but not on a Sunday night when we all have to kind of work the next day. Like, I don't know why we couldn't have doubled up some of those games to get a Sunday more kind of where it ended at 9 o'clock, and then they could put 60 minutes on and go from there. To me, that made it harder, especially with the A&M game finishing. It was an 8:40 tip back here on the East Coast.
Yeah, you feel
it's easy for you guys on the West Coast, but for us, it's harder.
That's what I was going to say. I feel for you and all those East Coasters that were asleep last night when you had the end of the Houston game, because for anybody that did miss it, and I'm sure you've seen the highlights this morning, you have a Houston team that's up 12 with like a minute 50 to go and just mistakes after mistakes, fouls. Like, they had four guys fouled out, key contributors. Texas A&M comes all the way back and forces overtime. Now, the better team prevailed in OT, winning 195. But if you're a Houston backer and you laid the 12.5, I mean, if you laid the 8.5, you were livid that you had that type of margin. Yeah. You're in position. And then the Texas A&M just obviously comes back. They score that 3 right before the buzzer to force overtime. But an awesome, awesome game.
It really was. And credit Texas A&M for coming back, not shooting well. Mm-hmm. I mean, Sheed is really that he, as a defender. Buzz Williams said before the tournament that he could guard anybody on any level, including the NBA. And you could see it the way he played. And they're a different team. I didn't think I had A&M going to the Sweet 16. I thought they would beat Houston. I thought Houston was vulnerable in terms of the injuries, not because they're not well coached, because they really are, and not because they're not a great defensive team, because they really are. But I felt like the injuries that we were hearing that they had within their program was going to affect them. And yet they have the mental toughness to withstand. But, you know, we've got 8 teams of the final of the Sweet 16 or 1 and 2 seeds.
Yeah.
That I've never seen that before, Stormy, ever.
Yeah, if you go through, I want to say, the East and West regions both have their 1, 2, 3, and 5 seeds all in the Sweet 16 there. And it's the first time you talked about it, having those 1 and 2 seeds. The first time since 2019, fifth time ever that the top 1s and 2s all have found their way to the Sweet 16. From a betting perspective, it was pretty interesting the way that rounds 1 and 2 played out, because round 1, you talk about Oakland over Kentucky and some of these big games and upsets that we saw transpire. Round 1 was for the dogs. Round 2 went for the favorites, because those first 2 days, 12 underdogs won outright. It was the most since 2001. And then round 2, we see this massive swing to the favorites, who go 15-1 straight up, 11-5 ATS. Double-digit favorites now entering the Sweet 16, Michael. 15-2 straight up, 14-3 against the spread. So is this favorites run going to continue? I don't know. We got some fun games coming up in the Sweet 16, though. Not except I don't feel I don't feel particularly good for my Aztecs, though, Michael. I'm facing UConn again does not give me good feelings.
Wow. I mean, we said this all week, right? UConn's, after I watched them play, was it Friday night? Yeah, they played Friday night, and how they dominated the first round. You just felt like the line, you know, I know Northwestern, you know, took Purdue to overtime and played well and, you know, played in a high level of competition in the Big Ten. But there's a different level of play out of UConn than there is against anybody in the tournament. And you're going to have to play, not that they're not beatable, but the team that beats them will have to play their finest day, their finest game on that specific day, or else it's not going to happen. Because UConn has that unique ability to have great talent, but they act as if they've never won anything in their lives. And they just play with intensity, and a credit to their head coach, Danny Hurley, who kind of brings this out in them. I mean, he coaches them hard. And what they say today, you can't be nice. Everybody, we're going to Dairy Queen afterwards. No, I'm thinking Hurley's taking anybody to Dairy Queen after the game, right? I mean, they're going hard. And I watched his practices, and I've seen what he does. It's impressive. I don't know about you, Stormy. I don't know if there's going to be a team that could beat them.
Yeah, they look lethal. And it's funny, too, watching the in-game when he does those interviews, like in that opening round game against Stetson. They're up God knows by how much, and he comes over to the interview pissed off because of the little things that his team isn't doing that's championship caliber, that if they want to get to another national championship, they need to be doing. And, of course, they beat Stetson 91-52. They beat Northwestern 75-58. And if you go back to the start of the tournament last year, since that game one of last year's tournament, they're 8-0, winning every game by 10+. The average score is 80-58, and now they're laying 10.5 against my Aztecs here, and I don't have a whole lot of confidence, especially considering that the East region is played in Boston. They're going to have that much more fandom at their back in this spot. My poor San Diego State team that I knew they were going to bounce back against Yale. So this is the thing, Michael. I had a rough go that second day of round one. Like, all of the underdogs that I liked, the one double-digit favorite that I liked doesn't win when all of the other ones are. Auburn was brutal. I thought they were going to beat Yale by 20. Yale ends up putting this awesome performance together, and they win. But I knew, and you know I'm such a San Diego State pessimist. I am a doubter. I knew there was no shot that Yale was going to be able to put that together again. And San Diego State had one of their much better shooting days than we are used to. An 85-57 win for my Aztecs in that spot. But I unfortunately think the buck stops here. And even at that number being 10.5, I don't have a lot of confidence of saying, hey, let me take the points with SDSU, because UConn looks like such a juggernaut right now.
They really do. I mean, they compete at a high level. They play defense. They score. They've got talent. I mean, you know, Duke to me yesterday watching the games, I don't know how you felt, but I thought Duke was, I saw a different Duke team than I'd seen in the past. That wasn't a four seed to me when you looked at Duke. I mean, I don't know, what are they, a two seed or you know?
Four.
To me, I think that they're a four seed. Like, I don't see them, you know, like could they beat Houston? I think they could, but Houston, obviously, the way they play defense and compete. But I just thought, to me, Duke was, you know, incredible, and they took it right to them. I mean, there was never a doubt in that James Madison game. And we talked all morning about how maybe James Madison, you know, they've played against good level of competition. They've only lost three games, Appalachian State twice. That game was over in the first 10 minutes. That was over. And the way Duke was shooting the ball with McCain, you know, the way they were able to just create anything they wanted. I think they were on Sunday, besides UConn, I thought they were one of the most impressive teams. Obviously, Purdue with what they did. But of the teams that are not 1 and 2 seed, I thought Duke was really impressive.
Yeah, to your point, James Madison's no slouch. Like, they've been a good team, and they got walloped 93-55, the final score there. And they've got, you mentioned Houston next, so they're getting 4 against Houston, total 133.5. And I do wonder, because you've talked about it a lot with Houston, Michael, is their depth and the injuries that they've had to deal with. We saw yesterday the foul trouble. And I think that is a spot that could really get Houston in trouble as they try to continue to climb in this bracket.
Yeah, and I think Duke is playing. I mean, look, Duke is, is just that they played at a different level yesterday, and you could see that they were into it, that their talent really shined, and they've got a good blend of young and old on their team, which is, how do you think Bruce Pearl feels today, Stormy? You know, losing to Yale and then watching Yale get destroyed. Like, at least if you're Calipari, you say, well, North Carolina State, that game could have gone both ways with Oakland and NC State, right? It was just down to the wire. I thought Oakland was going to win it, but they didn't shoot as well as they did in the first game. But still, if you're Auburn, that Yale loss has got to be the worst, because you knew, like you said, Yale wasn't going to beat. They were not going to beat San Diego State in the next round.
Yep. You're absolutely kicking yourself. And what a flop it's been for the SEC, by the way, who's 5-9 after winning 9 tournament games last year. Alabama and Tennessee, the only teams remaining, but Auburn, Kentucky, South Carolina, Florida, Mississippi State, now A&M yesterday, all out. And so NC State, meanwhile, the ACC out here, 8-1, them in the Big East just crushing everybody right now after the Big East got dogged and only got 3 teams in. They all still remain. But NC State, can they keep this up? They are the lone double-digit seed remaining in the field, and they get Marquette in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, and Marquette's beatable. I mean, look, let's face it, Marquette's beatable. They got better as the first game wore on, right? I mean, I thought Marquette played well. You know, in the first game, you know, we were concerned about them against Western Kentucky. And then Colorado, which is a good team, they battled through and they come out with a 4-point win in that game. But I think they're vulnerable. I do. Yeah. I think Marquette, maybe now that they're healthy, they're going to continue to improve and go. But I think that'll be a fun game. NC State is no 11 seed. I think that when you can win the ACC like they did, you're better than an 11 seed.
They are cruising, and it has been fun to watch. We'll get into some more college hoops when Thomas Gable joins us in about 20 minutes or so. But we're going to hit the break. When we come back, it is lying season in the NFL this week. All the league's big decision makers and media in Orlando. So Michael's going to read between the lines for us on some of the big quotes coming out of Orlando. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, so the center of the NFL world this week is in Orlando, as the league's biggest decision makers have all gathered for the league meetings. A little bit later on in the show, have no fear. Yes, we are going to be discussing some of the rule changes we know have already been passed, some that are still on the docket. But for now, with all these head coaches talking to media, it's lying season, Michael, and I need your help to read between the lines for what some of these coaches are saying. Like, what are they really saying? What is a narrative and what's reality? Because these coaches, sometimes the words come out of their mouth and I do not understand what they're thinking.
Well, I mean, what are they saying? I mean, some of it is like, do they think we're stupid? Like, seriously, of course, but there's no follow-up question. There's no, like, really? If this is what you're going to say? I mean, we have so many examples. I'll fill in the blanks.
Okay, perfect. So our first lying season quote candidate comes from Giants head coach Brian Daboll, who said in a sit-down with NFL Network's Tom Pelissero, you certainly want to have a better record than we had last year, so there's no stone unturned. But here's the kicker, Michael. He drew the line at changing the starting quarterback, said he's excited to get Daniel Jones back. Quote, when he gets back, he'll be the guy. Now, we have heard a lot of things about the Giants quarterback situation lately. The fact that the team is having, or the thought, excuse me, that the team is having buyer's remorse about Daniel Jones. So should we be taking Daboll at his word that Jones is the guy?
If you're a Giant fan and you're believing that, you got to be mad at Daboll. You got to be mad at Daboll, because at Daboll's career, he's 500 with Daniel Jones as a starter. With Daniel Jones as a Giant, he's 22-36-1. Never averaged over 7 yards per attempt. So, like, if you're a Giant fan, you're saying there's no way we're going to keep doing this, right, guys? Now, I'll give Daboll some latitude here, because he can't come out and kill Jones, because he's got him on the books for another $40 million or whatever it is this year. So he can't kill him. So he wants competition. So he's left himself a little bit of some wiggle room, saying there's no doubt Daniel's going to be our starter next year. But he didn't say he wasn't going to have competition.
Yeah.
Right? I know that they signed Drew Locke, but if they draft a J.J. McCarthy or the Bo Nix or somebody, then Daboll could come out and say, yeah, Daniel's our guy, but his contract's up and we got a guy in the waiting. So he left himself some out. you hope he left himself some out if you're a Giant fan, because if he truly believes that Daniel Jones is going to save his career, he will not be the coach of the Giants next year, because it's just going to fall apart. I mean, in 2 years, it's going to fall apart. He's got to know, watching the tape and watching his team, it isn't going to work. When it was optimum, they were 9-6-1 and got killed by the Eagles in every game. Mm.
Yeah, if you're a Giants fan, to your point, Michael, not only do you pay Daniel Jones over Saquon Barkley, who has since gone to a division rival now and will be in that running back room there in Philadelphia, but to know that you're hitched to this wagon, or at least to feel like you're hitched to this wagon, is not a good feeling. The dude had one good year, and got a $40 million a year contract. This past season, in his new deal, Jones had a 67.5% completion percentage, 909 yards, 2 touchdowns, 6 interceptions in a year that was cut short to an ACL. Let's go to another quarterback situation that's pretty interesting. Raiders head coach Antonio Pierce told Steve Wyke, Aiden O'Connell, quote, played his ass off, did a hell of a job in his mental toughness to play in the NFL. Quote, whatever happens and whatever we do, it has to go through Aiden O'Connell. Being honest with you, because he's earned that right. That sentence right there is what makes me quiver a little bit. I don't know what Aiden O'Connell has earned based on what we've watched him on the football field. Neither here nor there. Do we seriously believe that he could be QB1 heading into this offseason, even if the Raiders draft a quarterback, considering they just signed Gardner Minshew to a $15 million deal?
So the follow-up question should have been, Antonio, then why did you give Minshew $15 million?
Yeah, exactly.
Then why did you do that? If that's the way you think, why didn't you just draft one? If this guy's so good and he earned everything that you think he's earned, why did you spend $15 million? Are you kidding me? You signed Gardner Minshew the 2 days in the free agent. That was the guy you targeted. And so to me, it's like, how do you even take him seriously? Like, who is he selling this to? Like, who is he trying to make happy? Aiden O'Connell? Like, I get Daboll's situation. He's got a lot invested in Daniel Jones. Pierce has nothing invested in O'Connell other than a fourth-round pick and 2 more years of a cheap contract. So why is he lying to us? Why is he insulting our intelligence? Like, he brought Minshew in to be the starter, and he's going to draft one, perhaps. And so he's trying to revamp his room. I'm not saying kill O'Connell, but just saying, look, we signed Gardner. We're going to let Gardner and O'Connell duke it out, and we'll see what happens. But to think that he played well last year, when if he would have replaced him in a 3-0 game, he might have won that game, I think that's hard to believe.
Well, and that's the thing. Antonio Pierce's whole vibe and message has been about earning the respect of the locker room and doing right by his guys. And, like, are you getting respect from the locker room by saying that this guy who won largely nothing for us last year, who put us in a tough situation, and did a great job handing the ball off, perhaps we could say that, but I don't know. I don't get it. It's just a strange thing that you would go out of your way to sign a guy like Gardner Minshew and then say that, oh no, Aiden O'Connell has earned that right. That verbiage just feels a little bit off to me. Staying on the West Coast, Los Angeles Chargers new head coach Jim Harbaugh doubled down, maybe tripled down, on his affinity of his former quarterback at
Michigan.
Quadrupled
down.
Yeah, quadrupled down on J.J. McCarthy. Told reporters he's the best quarterback in this draft in reference to his pro day this past Friday. Said, that was the best workout I have ever seen a quarterback during a pro day. The best throwing day I've ever seen. And to hear coaches and GMs come to me, say great job with J.J. like I predicted, it was absolutely no surprise whatsoever. But there is also the little caveat here that the Chargers have the 5th position in this year's draft. He's also talking to reporters about how he's hearing quarterbacks could go 1, 2, 3, 4. Could he be sending a little smoke so that LA has their pick of the first non-quarterback off the board? Thoughts?
You know what I said on the pod today to Femi? I said, why don't somebody call his bluff? Why doesn't some team call him up like the Giants and say, look, if you want J.J. McCarthy, we'll give you this pick here. Just give us Herbert. Let us have Herbert. You know, let us have them. Now, you know, I think that'll change the tune. But what I do believe is what Jim's saying. He believes this, right? And I went in detail on this on the podcast because Jim is very good at evaluating quarterbacks. You know, years ago when he first started, he was adamant in our draft room to take Tony Romo, and everybody laughed at him. Everybody laughed at him. He loved Romo. Him and Johnny Morton, they loved him. Couldn't get Al to talk into him, but they loved Tony Romo and thought, well, we'll try to get him as a free agent. No chance, right? No chance. So, you know, when he evaluates a quarterback, and having been up there this summer, you know, we talked about McCarthy. This is before the year, before the season, and he knew And he felt then that McCarthy was the best quarterback he had. And he knew it when he had Cade McNamara. And he let that thing play out because he wanted to prove to people that this is what was going to happen. So I think he's talking seriously. And for me, I respect him enough to go back and say, let me keep watching this tape to see what he's seeing. What am I missing? Right? Because too often, Stormy, we evaluate the production, not right. what we're missing. And I think you've got to do that.
And I think so many of us from the outside looking in see that, like, he didn't have to do a lot of things and was that protection as a coach to your quarterback in that spot because he can't do certain things and maybe he is inaccurate. We don't know. Or is it just because you have all of these other things and your priority is winning? And if you have to do X, Y, Z to win, that's all you need to do. So, well, we've got a lot of questions to figure out about J.J. McCarthy, but I know one thing is for sure based on everybody that I have talked to about him. He's going to win those face-to-face meetings. He's going to win all of those conversations. Yeah. So it's just a matter of if you can believe, and to your point, find what we're missing.
And this draft has those guys. This is what makes this draft so appealing, right? There's Caleb Johnson, who has his own kind of persona about him, right? That's different. But then everybody else, Bo Nix, J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix, Drake May, those four guys are elite competitors, elite character. And that sells. Mm-hmm. Trust me, that sells. And I think that's what pushing them up the ladder, because you take for granted that with their work ethic and their determination and competitiveness, you're going to make them a better player. And sometimes you get into trouble.
Yeah, and J.J. McCarthy, a winner as well, has that pedigree, 27-1 as a starter at Michigan. Sticking with the theme of the draft, Patriots head coach Jerod Mayo said drafting a quarterback is the priority right now, but you have to really be in love with a guy to take him number three. All of the options are still open for us. Is that reality? Like, could Mayo be telling the truth that if they're not really in love, they might not take a quarterback?
Well, he left him an out that he could use the love note. You know, it's not me, it's you. That's why we're breaking up, right? Isn't that how it goes,
yeah,
Stormy? It's not me, it's not you, it's me, right? So we didn't want to take it. You know, look, I think they signed Brissett on a one-year contract. See, I think what you have to do this time of the year is stop listening and look at reality. Look at the reality of Aiden O'Connell. Look at the reality of the quarterback position of the New England Patriots. Look at the reality that they only signed Jacoby Brissett for a one-year contract. Those realities, they're not circumstantial. They're not, you know, something that's just out of the blue. There's a reason for that, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because they want to draft a quarterback. And they wouldn't have structured contracts that way if they didn't. So I tend to believe they're going to pick one, because if they don't, a year from now, they won't have one.
Yep. Caleb Williams still a -3,500 favorite to go number one overall. You got Drake May as the favorite to be picked at three, -135. Jaden Daniels +170 to be the number three pick to the Patriots. We are going to hit the break. When we come back, Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata, will take us behind the counter.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you haven't already, what are you doing? It's time to sign up for a VSiN Pro annual subscription. When you do, you get your first year for $199 instead of the usual $240 price. Use our promo code Lombardi. Get VSiN Pro access to everything we do for the whole year. That means our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. Betting systems, premium analysis, 24/7 video access, plus access to our March Madness betting hub that has updated picks for every game of the tournament as we go. Remember, use that promo code Lombardi. Your first year of VSiN Pro access for $199. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we hit the Progressive Hotline guest line and welcome in great friend of the show, Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata out there in Atlantic City. And we think about, you know, the early moments of the tournament where we had these amazing upsets. It's Oakland, it's Yale, it's Duquesne. And then boy, did things turn in favor of the favorites there those last couple of days, TG. What did that mean for the book?
Well, it was weird because Saturday, out of the first 4 days, Saturday was our best hold out of the 4 days. So even though all the favorites came in, that was the best results for us. And then yesterday, again, pretty much sticking with the same theme, our hold was the worst of the 4 days. So things kind of flipped yesterday for us. But, you know, handle was tremendous. You know, as we expected it to be, you know, the crowds here were great, Thursday through Sunday. So, couldn't be more happy with, the way that things turned out. And, you know, as we said before, the tournament, especially the first two rounds, people tend to gravitate towards the dogs a little bit more than what they would in, you know, normally in, whether it's college basketball or any other sport. The public typically tends to bet favorites. And that changes here, with the NCAA tournament. So, the first 2 days, Friday, Saturday, I mean, you kind of just, we came out right at the percentage where we expect to be, right around 5.5%, 6% there in hold for those days. And, you know, it's, but we have the opportunity here now, looking at this Sweet 16 field, a rare opportunity where you could potentially get in all four regions a 1-2 matchup in the Elite Eight. All the ones and twos are still alive, and that rarely, if ever, happens. And here we are. It's possible that it could happen this year.
One of the ones is right up the road in Storrs, Connecticut, TG. And I wonder, if you watch them and you're a huge Big East fan and aficionado of the game, they're playing at a level that I'm not sure justifies just a one seed. They may be like a one elite seed than anything else, because they're not beating teams. They're dominating. Have you felt that way in your handicapping as well?
Well, they certainly have looked very, very strong. And right now, I think I have them power rated as high as I have all season. So I still only really have them a point above Houston in my power ratings, but UConn is at their highest rating that I've had them at all season. And, you know, San Diego State's going to face a tough test. You know, it's one of these things where now the line opened up 9.5. Now it's up to 10.5, 11 in some places. You know, at some point I expect there's going to be some buyback here on San Diego State, but I'm not surprised at the line movement. People have jumped on UConn since the line opened in this game. And, you know, it's just, again, what we've seen recently, not only just in the first two rounds, but going back even into the Big East tournament and how this team has looked. As you said, Michael, there really is no flaws on that team, whether offensively or defensively. Obviously, tremendous coaching, very, very disciplined play. And it's tough. I mean, can they be beaten? Yes, they can be beaten. And we've seen them lose this year a number of times. But right now, yes, they are the best team in college basketball. It's going to take a special effort from somebody to knock them off.
Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata, joining us live on the Progressive Guest Line. Another one seed that has been dominant to this point is the Purdue Boilermakers. They beat Grambling, no problem, after a little bit of a slow start. Then we're back with a vengeance in round two, crushing Utah State. Now they face their first real test in the Sweet 16 against Gonzaga. They are a good, decent favorite in this spot. Do you think that they can keep it rolling, or will the Matt Painter quality start to bring this team down a little bit? I mean, Zach Edey's been tremendous.
He has been. And, you know, Purdue, that was one of our biggest losses yesterday, was that game. Everybody was piled on Purdue and they got rewarded for that. And, you know, Purdue, I make this game 5. Right now you're seeing, you know, 5, 5.5, depending where you're looking at. But the Zags are also playing very well. They're playing at their highest level, I think, of this season, or very close to their highest point that they've played at. And at some point now you say, all right, well, Painter and Barnes in the same region have gotten past the first two rounds. So a little bit of an accomplishment there for those two gentlemen. But now let's see if they can get to the Elite Eight and face off against each other. But, you know, again, Edey, it's going to depend, I think, a little bit on officiating and how they officiate the game. Especially it's a little bit challenging when you're dealing with somebody that size. And if you're not, from that conference, if you don't typically officiate that conference, it gets a little bit, you know, you wonder how they're going to officiate the game, because they could literally call everything, where he's getting fouled on almost every single play, or are they going to let it go a little bit? Plus, you know, how are they going to officiate it with him? Are they going to call some offensive fouls where maybe he wouldn't be called for in conference play with people who are used to officiating those games?
Hey, TG, so North Carolina State's been on this incredible run, and you know Marquette as your Big East guy. Do you feel like North Carolina State is probably better valued than an 11th seed? And how did you adjust their power rating based on what they've been able to accomplish in this tournament and in the ACC tournament?
Yeah, so again, North Carolina State, they're the team that's playing up to their highest power rating of the year right now. Marquette is not. Now, Marquette is a different team when they're at full strength, which they've been for this tournament. But I think this is a little bit too high of a line here in this one. 6.5 is where it currently sits. I make this actually closer to 3.5. So I would be looking to take the points here with North Carolina State. Again, Marquette, when they have everybody and they're at full strength, they're a different team than what we have seen coming down the stretch and in the Big East tournament. But now with Kolek there, they're a tough out. But I think it's still a little bit too many points here to be given NC State.
TG, I do have one quick question on the women's tournament, because today is the final home game of Caitlin Clark's career at Iowa, and we know that they are a massive favorite today against West Virginia. In a sport like women's basketball that typically throughout the course of the year gets less play, there's not a ton of handle that you have coming in on these games, but you have a star like her. Is everything coming up Iowa in this spot? Is it extremely lopsided, or how is that from a betting standpoint when you have a game like this, but a star like her?
Well, she transcends that sport, and I think draws just so much interest to it that normally wouldn't be there. Now, I'll say this, the NCAA women's tournament, the last couple of years, the handle has been building every year. The interest has been growing every year, and this year is no exception. And I think Clark obviously, you know, gets a lot of the media coverage and a lot of the press and attention, and well, deservedly so. But she's drawing eyes to the tournament as a whole. She's drawing betting interest to the tournament as a whole. And to your point, does Iowa seem to get bet more? Yes, I think just because of her being there, she attracts more handle on those games and certainly towards Iowa. Now, they are 14.5 point favorites here against West Virginia tonight. I think you'll see some people just be contrarian and take West Virginia here. I mean, West Virginia's not being completely ignored by the bettors, but by and large, people are going to be betting Iowa simply because of Clark and the attention that she draws.
Have you become a Connecticut shop with all the East Coast TG?
I'll tell you, yesterday, it was a lot of Connecticut money here, Michael. There was a lot of Purdue money yesterday, and those were probably the worst two results from the games yesterday. The game that really didn't garner much betting attention out of all the games yesterday was Houston, which was a little bit surprising, especially how great of a game that turned out to be.
Yeah, ended up being the game of the day. TG, you're awesome. Thanks so much for doing this. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks,
right,
TG.
Thanks,
Thomas Gable. Follow him at Borgata Sports. We're going to hit the break here. When we come back, a number of rule changes being discussed in Orlando as the NFL owners' meetings roll on. Some have already been decided, others still up in the air. But what would Michael do if given the choice? We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook, because right now we've got a VSiN exclusive offer for new DK customers. You can earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager, up to $2,500 in bonus bets your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now. Use our code Lombardi when you sign up. And again, that'll earn you a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager right now. alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonantoni with you, and let's get into a little NFL talk right now because the owners' meetings are ongoing out there in Orlando right now. All 32 owners have the opportunity to vote on a number of different rule changes, situation changes. We've seen a couple, Michael, that have already come through, a few still to be determined, a few that could be pushed back potentially, but the big one, and I'm curious if you were in the room how you would vote on it. The big one that is making the rounds right now that apparently was passed unanimously by owners today was to eliminate and ban the hip drop tackle. What was your reaction when you first saw that come through? And if you were in the room, how would you have voted?
Well, I'm not sure it was unanimous because I talked to two teams last week that were completely against it. So somehow it became unanimous, as only things in those voting arenas happen. Remember this, there's never rarely a call for a vote that they don't think they can pass.
Right.
You know, it's they're very Lyndon Johnson-ish in that room. They know the votes, they count votes, they understand it. There's a lot of persuasive maneuvering to get the votes you need if the commissioner wants to pass something that goes beyond the field. So my vote would have been, how are we going to officiate it? See, the rule to have player safety is perfect, right? We want that. No one's against that. But how are we going to officiate it? Are we going to officiate it where we're going to throw the flag and then review it? We're going to just officiate it because if we think we see it, we're going to call it. Big difference. And this is where I have a problem, because the disconnect between the rule and the implementation of the rule, and then when we review it, I promise you in October, November, sometime in January, somebody's going to be complaining about a call that occurred that wasn't the right call. It happens all the time. And the more rules you put in place without clarification, the cloudier it becomes. So my vote would have been, okay, why don't we bring the officials in here and tell us, how are they going to call this? Who's responsible? Who has the call in what area? And what does it look like? And what's the difference between what is acceptable and what isn't? Because remember this, the coaches, all of them, are teachers. And so they've got to teach the students, the players, what they can and can't do. And the problem is it gets very muddy. And because there's a disconnect between the teaching element and what they're calling, there lies the problem.
To your point about injuries, a league study determined that those types of drag down hits resulted in as many as 25 times more injuries than a conventional tackle. So it's the defensive player lifting himself off the ground and using his weight to fall on the offensive player that they're trying to get rid of. But the problem with that is, as you alluded to there, is it's very subjective. There's going to be a lot of judgment calls in how this comes through. The penalty, 15 yards and an automatic first down, is how it'll be played. But even in the meetings, Michael, they rolled video examples of, you know, the differences between a hip drop tackle and a, I guess, a swivel hip drop tackle is what they're calling the opposing side of it that is legal. And a number of the clips just look like a conventional standard tackle. So even then, even in the examples that they're showing, were very difficult to read through. So I think your points are all really, really well made. And it's something that we'll have to really monitor, especially in those preseason games and like the first month of the season, to see how those are officiated. Another one, the Lions challenge rule adjustment has been passed. So if you get a challenge right, you get to keep your challenge up to three. The old rule, you had to get two challenges before receiving a third. Thoughts there?
I think that's perfect. I think, look, I don't think it's going to delay the game. I think we can operate the challenges quicker. We see what's going on. We don't need to take forever on them. And we see it in the playoffs where there's the kind of the quick review when they know they missed it. But I'm telling you, on this tackling, it's going to be a little bit of a cloudy thing because nobody's going to be on the same page. We're not on the same page with pass interference, and that's been going on for since the Ralph Hay car dealership back in Canton, Ohio, when the league started. We haven't gotten that right yet.
You're not wrong. This next one I do think is a positive. When it comes to roughing the passer and intentional grounding, replay assistant will be permitted to call in certain types of things. Like if it's looked as wrong, the booth can call down and say, hey, let's take a look at this again. The caveat here, it must be purely objective. Like, was there a hit to the head? But I think that's great, because how many times have we had questionable, is there a man in the area? Is there not a man in the area? And they all gather up and talk, and then we just see. But to have the replay and have it right, I think is a great addition.
Specifically, if the ball goes past the line of scrimmage, mm-hmm. sometimes they give it to the team. You know, the ball didn't, you know, it went past. No, it really didn't go past. So I think it does need to be reviewed, right? And I think to me, this is only good where they could at least go up. Is it really roughing? Are we sure that's mm-hmm. is? Is it grounding? Are we sure that is? I think it's important.
Well, yeah, and how many times throughout the course of the football season have we been, there is no way that's roughing. That's a good football play. That's not roughing the passer. And now you can have that look at it again, and get the call right.
Again, define it, though. Again, when you force them to define a rule clearly, then all of a sudden the gray goes away and it's harder for them to get away with it. Now all of a sudden they're making a mistake. See, remember, everything's about not making a mistake. It's officiated perfectly. But look, let's face it. The Rams might not have been in a Super Bowl if we would have had replay on pass interference.
Looking at a lot of the NFL competition committee rules, adjustments, things that the league owners are voting on today. So we've talked about a few that have already been passed through, some still to be determined, Michael. One of those being the tweak to the NFL kickoff, trying to do a one-year trial similar to what they did last year. And obviously in the kicking game, it's a different situation. But what would you do if you were in the room? How would you vote? Would you like to keep the kickoff rules as they are or adjust them to this version that is supposed to limit those hard hits and promote more returns?
Yeah, I want it to stay the same. You know, I want the return game part of the game. I want special teams to stay as an important factor in the game. And I think ultimately this will have a hard time. I don't think every team's happy about the new kickoff proposal. I think there's some teams interested in looking at it, but I don't know if they're happy about it, because what it does for you as a coach, it does develop your toughness as your team. You need it. You can control where you kick the ball. Teams are, you know, kicking it high in the air. They want the returns. They're trying to force teams to try to bring it out. And naturally, guys do it, and they end up with the ball at the 18. And you're wondering, look, if you just would have fair caught that damn thing, we'd have it at the 25. So I think I would be against it. I'm going to keep looking at it. I've seen some videos of it. We'll see. I initially, to me, I don't like altering the game as dramatically as that looks like it does.
Yeah, and even obviously like this version, it's altered a bit from what the XFL had done last year, but I don't think that there was enough information from one season of seeing that to determine if it really makes a big enough difference to make it impactful from a health and safety standpoint as well. So I don't like it. I like a traditional kickoff. I think there are ways that you could tweak it to make it better, maybe kicking off from farther back to promote returns versus having it be a touchback. I don't know. But what about this other one? Challenges in the final, unrestricted challenges in the final 2 minutes here. So the rule would allow a coach or replay official to challenge any foul that has been called in the last 2 minutes of a game. You like that?
I like that. I do. I like that. I think to me, the games always come down to the last few minutes of the game, right? Let's get that right. Let's get that right. And if it takes an extra minute or two, who cares? Let's just get it right. Aren't we more, you know, as Al Davis used to say all the time, oh, kid, I'm not looking to be consistent. I'm looking to be correct. Can't we get it correct?
I love it. This next one is the one that I would love to see. Absolutely would love to see it. Instead of an onside kick attempt in the fourth quarter, if trailing, to attempt to be a conversion of a 4th and 20. I would love that. I think that would be so fun.
That's too gimmicky for me. It's too gimmicky for me.
Really?
I can't go there. I can't. Yeah, it's too gimmicky for me because, you know, I like the fact that, look, if you're in that spot and you've I think this would allow teams to get back in the game, you know, because 4th and 20, sometimes you convert those. Now, I know it's probably 16 or 15%, but teams do convert it, and it's allowing a bad team to get back in the game when they didn't earn the right to get back in the game.
See,
it's too gimmicky for me, Stormy.
With the onside kicks only converting at like 5%, they're still doing a difficult play in order for you to convert it, but giving you more opportunity. And it's not like you could do an onside kick instead. It's not saying you eliminate the onside kick, but you have the option to do something else. I like it. And you know the Chiefs would be using it every opportunity that they had. If trailing in a fourth quarter, taking advantage, they're going to. And you would be terrified if you're on the opposite sideline. I think it'd be fun. Okay, we're going to hit the break. Resetting with hour two of the Lombardi Line when we come back. Plenty more NFL news and notes and college hoops to get to.